Hey there, it's Dr. Gary Parrish. It's Friday, January 18, 2019. Welcome back to the Ion College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting and leaky black. Matt Norlanda is here with me, and it's been a fun few days since we last recorded on Tuesday morning. Ole Miss and North Carolina State both lost to unranked opponents, and Ole Miss did it at home. Iowa State won at Texas Tech. Kansas State won at Oklahoma. So now everybody in the Big 12 has at least one loss. And now, once again, Kansas is projected by KenPom to win the league outright. Surprise, surprise. And before we get into what's on tap for this weekend, I do want to spend just a few minutes on what Kansas State has done over the past 9 days, because I really do think it's the best week-to-week season flip in the nation. Check this out. So Kansas State goes to the Elite Eight last season, brings back some good pieces, is ranked 12th in the preseason AP poll, 11th in the preseason coaches poll, and then the Wildcats start 6-2 with no good wins and a double-digit loss to Marquette and a 47-46 loss at Tulsa. So now they're unranked, right? Then they enter Big 12 play with a 10-2 record, but still no good wins on the resume. Then Kansas State loses the Big 12 opener to Texas, then loses to Texas Tech. So now 0-2 in the league, and then last Wednesday night, they're down 18 points at home to West Virginia. Obviously on the verge of dropping to 0-3 with games at Iowa State and at Oklahoma on deck. In other words, 0-5 in the Big 12 is starting to look very possible, if not probable. But then they erase that 18-point deficit. Last Wednesday, they beat West Virginia. Then they go and win at Iowa State over the weekend. And then on this Wednesday night, the one that just happened, Kansas State wins at Oklahoma. So instead of being 10-7 overall, 0-5 in the Big 12, Kansas State is currently 13-4 overall, 3-2 in the Big 12, because Kansas State overcame that 18-point deficit to beat West Virginia, then won two road games as an underdog. That's how you flip a season, Norlander. Shouts to Bruce Weber. Shouts to Dean Wade. Shouts to Jacob Pullen.
Yeah, shouts to Rodney Magruder as well. Kansas State is 37th in the net as we record this podcast. 2-2 in quad one opportunities. A lot of work to be done. 1-2 in quad two and hasn't taken a bad loss yet this season. Dean Wade's return is unquestionably extremely important. And I would even argue that in watching some of what K-State's done, he's important, but we have not seen the best of him or the best of this team to come. I get the feeling that one K-State will be better than it was last season in terms of the seeding. I think it'll wind up with better than a 9. But I do think that because of the Big 12 being somewhat interchangeable, I don't think Kansas State is going to compete for the top of the league table. I don't think anyone really is expecting that. But let's just say K-State winds up, going 10-8 in the league or something like that. Maybe even 11-7. Let's go optimistic. I still think it's going to enter Selection Sunday in the NCAA tournament as afterthought sounds harsh, but unfortunately, there are certain programs that unless they have superstars or are in the midst of amazing seasons, do not get the kind of publicity and credit they deserve. And I would put Kansas State in that kind of category with a number of other ones. I mean, I would say, if Oregon State had a season in which it went 26-9 or whatever, it just wouldn't get a lot of recognition because it's Oregon State. I feel like Kansas State and the job that Bruce Weber has done there in the big picture has been a little bit a little less unheralded than maybe is deserving. He's gone to the NCAA tournament for the past 6 seasons. This will be 5-7 because I don't see how Kansas State will not get there. But yes, you are correct. The flip on this has been significant, and now it gets 2 home games upcoming, TCU and Texas Tech. Just split those. Winning both would really, really change the outlook on K-State overall, but I don't expect it to win both of them, frankly. But they're fun, and I mean, Xavier Seed's a good player, but Barry Brown. See, I would list Barry Brown, who's their senior kind of pogo stick shooting guard. I would list him among, top 20 most watchable players in all of college basketball. K-State's got better pieces just because they're not the flashiest team and you're not used to making them appointment television. Doesn't mean that they're not a good team. They are quality. And where do they fall right now for you in your rankings, GP?
They're not. They're under consideration. They're right there. They'd be in the top 30, 35, something like that. Right now, and I get people asking this all the time, why don't you have Kansas State ranked? Why don't you have, I can't remember who the other team is, Iowa State. Why don't you have Iowa State ranked? Because right now, there's about 10 teams that could reasonably be 26th in the top 25 and 1. Kansas State's one of them. Iowa State's one of them. The team that I have there, Iowa, is one of them. And it really just comes down to when people ask the question, why don't you have this team ranked? Because they stop at 26 instead of 28. It's just where we draw the line, like between ranked and unranked. If I rank 28, Iowa State might be 27, Kansas State might be 28. You know, it's so like those teams are good, no different than the teams I have really, 24, 25, 26. It's just that you draw the line somewhere, and that's where I drew the line. I don't know how fun Kansas State is, but I just think it's a fascinating story, not only because they flipped the season, but because Bruce Weber, as you mentioned, doesn't get probably credit around the nation. I know Kansas State fans right now are probably wanting to punch us in our throat because I don't think he's the most popular coach in history among his own fan base. But he's done, big picture, a fine job there. And it was on the verge of, like, really getting bad. I mean, when you're 0-2 and down 18 at home to West Virginia, mm-hmm. or anybody, you're supposed to go to 0-3. And then you've got road games against NCAA tournament teams coming up, two of them. So you're supposed to go to 0-5. I mean, the reason I know all this stuff is because we were sitting in studio and we were talking about it. Oh, my God, KSU is about to go to 0-3. Have you seen what's next for them? They might be 0-5 in the Big 12 after being top 15 in the preseason AP poll. But they erased that deficit, beat West Virginia, then go on the road and win two road games. I just think it's a pretty, not only season flip, but maybe like career extender for Bruce Weber.
Potentially, but I want to see what the rest of the season plays out as. And I don't, like, let me rephrase that. It would take an utter collapse, I think, for it to really, because Bruce, I believe, got an extension this past offseason.
Sure. Yeah, I don't think he would get fired, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It could, like, it get real bad, and now it's not so bad at all.
Sure, absolutely. On the Big 12 note, real quick here, I mean, that's Kansas State is an interesting story as it begins to develop. And you mentioned, I did want to shed just a quick light on what Iowa State was able to do. I don't think Texas Tech will lose again at home this season. And I say that believing, one, that Kansas is going to win the league. Things are breaking Kansas's way. But I think KU would take a loss there. And Iowa State now has the home win. It's had a weird stretch. We talk about, like, how K-State flipped. Iowa State has sandwiched two weird losses with one of the best pair of wins any team that could boast in college basketball at this point in the season. Wins at home against Kansas in very convincing fashion. Just wins at Texas Tech, and did it, by the way, with a late push against by TTU. Impressively done, because Iowa State, which has a fairly good offense, in my opinion, and loads of talent, arguably the most talent in the league now with Kansas's issues. We still don't know with D'Souza if and when he's going to get cleared, and the Noah Azubuike, of course. But in between that, they lose at Baylor, which is, it's not a horrendous loss, but, you know, Baylor could be 9th or 10th in the league, and you don't want to try and take that kind of L when you're Iowa State and you're trying to build momentum. And then, yes, drops the game at home by one to Kansas State, but Iowa State rebounds well, and now the Big 12, everyone's taken a loss, and it's obviously Tech and Kansas atop the league. And then the two lost teams as of right now, K-State, as you mentioned, TCU and Baylor. Everyone else has at least three losses. Big 12 is going to get really wacky, really weird in a hurry. Last thing on Big 12, TCU, I had this in the court report on Wednesday. At that point, it was not optimistic it was getting Jalen Fisher back anytime soon, and might not even have him for the rest of the season because of complications from his knee surgery. He's now done. Not even just done for the foreseeable future. He's not returning to TCU this season. He's not returning to TCU, period. He will seek transfer. I think that's critical, because I think Fisher was their most important all-around player. Now, Desmond Bain is the leading scorer, and he's done a great job. I think J.D. Miller is coming on and has done well in his senior season. But not to have Fisher, we talk about what K-State's going to be going forward here, Parrish. TCU, another team that doesn't get a lot of run on the pub, although we've given Jamie Dixon his fair share of good chatter here. Be curious to see what they are going forward. I still think they'll crack through. But I now think that they're the most likely team in the Big 12 that projects as an NCAA tournament team to be on the bubble, on the fence, when we get to Selection Sunday.
With TCU and Jalen Fisher, that's my little homie from Memphis. By shutting it down now, it appears he'll be able to get a medical redshirt and preserve a year of eligibility. So we'll see where he ends up. But he's a very good college basketball player when healthy. The problem, of course, is that he's He's rarely healthy. One thing on Iowa State before we move on, you mentioned how they've got a pair of great wins. You know who their resume looks a lot like? Kentucky's. Kentucky's. Iowa State's got these two massive wins, but they're 4-4 against the top 100 at KenPom. Kentucky, similarly, got these two massive wins, right? They've beaten North Carolina. They've beaten Louisville. You know what they are against the top 100, Kentucky?
4-4.
3-3.
Yeah.
3-3 against the top 100 at KenPom. Iowa State 4-4 against the top 100 at KenPom. Both of them got two big wins, but the quantity doesn't quite match up with the quality. We'll get to Kentucky a little later on in this because they've got a big game this weekend. So I'm in Durham, North Carolina, for Saturday's showdown between Virginia and Duke. We're going to dive into that momentarily. But first, check this out.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Taylor Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Taylor Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Taylor Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Taylor Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Taylor Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Taylor Brands.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country. The kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
So Virginia Duke is scheduled for 6 p.m. Eastern on Saturday at Cameron Indoor Stadium. Virginia is number one in the coaches poll. Duke is number one in the AP poll. So this is a rare number one versus number one matchup. It'll be Duke's first full game since Trey Jones suffered a shoulder injury in that loss to Syracuse. And it'll be Virginia's first game since it just kicked the crap out of Virginia Tech by 22 points. They shot 58% from the field in this game, 54% from three, 100% from the free throw line, improved to 16-0. So they, like, not only is Virginia undefeated, they're really operating at a high level right now. As you might have heard, Trey Jones, as of this moment, has not been ruled out of Saturday's game. It turns out the injury is not as severe as it looked Monday night. I was told Trey didn't practice Thursday, but he was on the court doing some basketball things. I was also told he's unlikely to play against Virginia, but nobody ruled it out that he's just definitely not playing against Virginia. Either way, he is expected to play again soon. So that's good news for Duke. Norlander, let's just get your thoughts on the Trey Jones update and Duke Virginia in general.
Well, my thoughts on the Trey Jones update is that you are a quack, because on the previous podcast, your diagnosis as a doctor was that he was going to miss definitively at least the next 4 or 5 games. That's not the case anymore. So, I got to take you to task here. This is so.
Should I lose my medical license?
If he is playing again within a week, yeah, I'm afraid that's. Listen, this podcast.
I feel a little bit like Dr. Death. Yeah. Have you listened to Dr. Death?
I haven't, but the credibility of this podcast is what helps it thrive. And when you're out here with conviction handing out these diagnoses, and then you're coming back 48 hours later saying, you know what, like, they're not ruling them out. No, you said it, doctor.
I know. Do I have to turn in my stethoscope?
No, I think you still need to wear that stethoscope.
I'm going to wear my stethoscope no matter what.
You better
right?
be wearing that I better see you on the sideline in Cameron Indoor rocking a legit stethoscope, okay?
I got to do CBS Sports HQ hit here a little later on today. Should I do it with a stethoscope?
You know what? Why not? Casually, just have it drape, you know?
Yeah. Don't mention it. Don't reference it. Just
right.
wear it.
Only the podcast listeners will get it. And by the way, yes, Parrish is in Durham. I'm going to get to the Trey Jones stuff real quick here. But Parrish is in Durham. Obviously going to be writing and covering that game for CBS Sports HQ. I will be in studio for HQ this weekend. So please, as you're watching the games on your phone, on your iPad, on your computer, it is a genuinely really good, informative second screen experience. Encourage you to check in throughout the day. We'll be giving you updates, highlights, analysis. GP will be coming from Durham, so keep an eye on that. As for Duke and Virginia and this game overall, we have our picks and our predictions up on CBSSports.com as of Friday afternoon. Be sure to go check that out, but we'll probably spoil our picks for this specific game here amid the other ones we have on the site. I don't think Trey Jones will play, not just because it's obvious, but I also just don't think it's worth it because given the immediate reaction, and I know you said he was doing basketball things, I don't believe you want to put him in that situation against that team when you got to play Virginia again. You've got a long, rigorous ACC schedule, and really, Krzyzewski and that staff just seem too smart to put him in a position where even if he's at 95%, hell, call it 99%, and something weird happens, like he just catches an elbow from DeAndre Hunter, then what are you doing? So I don't expect him to be on the floor, and absent of that, how Duke is going to run its offense is going to be really curious to me. I don't think we're going to have a James Harden-like R.J. Barrett going for 49 points on zero assists and having it all go through him. I don't think that's going to be the case at all. The biggest subplot to me in this game is that Duke is coming off one of the worst three-point shooting performances ever under Mike Krzyzewski against Syracuse in that zone. Now it goes up against a Virginia team that defends the three, obviously, extremely well. This is also tracking to be the worst three-point shooting team for Duke in at least two decades. Can it rebound from such a bad performance beyond the arc and shoot well from deep? Because if it doesn't, does it have the ability to win inside? I'm not convinced it does. And then the other obvious one is Zion Williamson and what he is and all he can do and all he represents going up against what will be the most interesting and toughest defensive assignment he has faced yet. They still have a lot of talent. I am going to take Duke to win this game close. I really, really hope that it lives up to the hype. But this is a fantastic one. And only the fourth time ever. Only the fourth time ever. Trivia time.
Okay.
I think you know this, though, because it's kind of been out there, but maybe you don't. So it's the fourth time ever we've had it's a battle of number ones, because Virginia's won in the coaches poll. Duke has won in the AP poll. Can you name any of the previous three times that one played one?
I think I can. I haven't seen it anywhere. Anybody listening to this podcast knows I don't remember much, but I do remember this. I feel like we had Kansas, Oklahoma not too long ago, Buddy Hield, right?
That is right. 1-4-16, Kansas beats Oklahoma in an absolute epic 109-106. That is the most recent instance.
I do not remember the other two.
Okay. The other one, if you had asked me before I found this out, I would have gotten one of the teams right, but I couldn't have told you the other team, and I remembered it happening because I remember it being a kind of big deal. It was in 2007. Oh, it's funny. The 2016 game, 109-106, the previous one, Ohio State 49, Wisconsin 48. Incredible. Right. No cheating. Can you tell me one player on each of those Wisconsin and Ohio State teams from that season?
Yes. Okay. Ohio State would have had Mike Conley, Greg Oden, right?
You're correct. So that's kind of an easy giveaway. Okay. But
okay.
What about
my dude's name at Wisconsin who was the All-American like Player of the Year candidate? Start with the A. His name starts with the A.
You're correct. You can't. But can you name him?
Oh my God! What's his name? How can I not remember his name? Starts with an A.
It does start with an A. Podcast listeners just saying it aloud on the treadmill, in their cars, washing dishes. Alondo Tucker.
Alondo Tucker, yes.
Alondo Tucker was on that team. Marcus Lange.
He was awesome. I love Alondo Tucker.
Very good player. Joe Krabenhoff was on that Wisconsin team. So that was the other instance. And then prior to that, the only other time this happened, you wouldn't get this, was 1960.
No, I knew this one.
Oh, why?
I'm just kidding.
Okay, like what? Oh, I was like, no shot. I guess it would have been in the tournament technically. Cal 77, Cincinnati 69. So those are the three previous times. So this is a cool thing. Number one versus number one. We've had many more instances of number one versus number two in the AP poll or coaches poll, but we get a rarity here. GP, what are your expectations and thoughts on this one?
Well, I'm glad you brought up the three-point shooting because I thought there was an interesting quote from Tyus Battle, Syracuse's Tyus Battle, after Monday's game. He said the following, quote, "We were just letting them shoot the three, just backing up and trying to limit Zion's touches as much as possible." So this wasn't just something that happened in that Duke-Syracuse game. This is something that Syracuse made happen in that Duke-Syracuse game. Duke was 9 of 43 from three, 20.9%. And on the season now, Duke is shooting 31.8% from three. That ranks 267th nationally. Statistically speaking, there is nothing Duke does worse than shoot three-pointers. And you mentioned guarding the three-point line. Not just really good, like literally the best in the country. Teams are shooting 25.1% from three against Virginia. It ranks first nationally. So this is a real problem. It's something Syracuse recognized, and you don't have to be like Brad Stevens to recognize it. You just have to like have a KenPom subscription. And Syracuse invited Duke. Duke didn't just shoot 43 three-pointers by accident. Syracuse dared them to do it, and it did not go well. And now, like just a few days later, you got to play the team that's literally the best at guarding the three-point line. That's not a good combo, is it?
It's not, but let's do an over-under here. So let's split that, okay, between Duke's average and Virginia's average. Over-under, Duke making 28.5% of its three-point attempts on Saturday against Virginia.
I'll take the over.
So will I.
But I don't feel great about it, but I'll take the over.
Well, I'm not asking you how you got to feel about it.
How about this? I'll take the over.
Yeah.
Because I think Duke's going to win the game, just like you think Duke's going to win the game. And you can't. I don't think you can win the game shooting below that.
It would be a tough ask. It really would. I'm kind of on that similar wavelength with you, GP. I think it will play better and shoot better from deep. I mean, Jack White went 0 of 10, and it almost looked like they were just trying to shoot themselves out of a funk. And what was weird against Syracuse, it was a tight game. They wound up not being able to afford it, even though it got to overtime. The final numbers on that, by the way, were 9 of 43 from three-point range for Duke against Syracuse. Just that is so low. That's only, 21%? I don't think it will be that bad, but we'll see. And my last thought in this game, and obviously on the Sunday podcast, we're going to spend some time talking about it no matter how it goes. If Virginia wins this game, like, convincingly, if it winds up 73-61, it'll be intriguing to see how everyone responds more to Virginia than maybe Duke, even though Duke is almost always the story regardless of result. But in this instance, the game being on Duke's floor, if Virginia was to do that and remained undefeated, and if Michigan lost its game, Michigan plays, hello, at Wisconsin, we just mentioned, if Virginia's the last undefeated standing, which was my prediction when we made those predictions like a month ago or whatever on the pod, I'll be pretty intrigued by how we'll view the Cavaliers, because I still think people are going to wait until March to make their judgments on this team. But whatever, they've been dominant overall, and I think they've got the capability to do it. But I don't expect them to do it. But it would be a hell of a statement if they wound up walking out of Cameron Indoor as double digit victors.
They not only are capable, they're you know, like. I don't know what the point spread will be. I imagine it'll be like Duke by a point or two, but it's going to be right around there. So it's not even – we're not asking them to do something that's outrageous. If they win at Cameron Indoor this weekend, especially if Trey Jones doesn't play, It won't even be in the top 10 upsets of the weekend in college basketball. And again, they're just coming off an incredible game against Virginia Tech, 58% from the field, 54% from three, 100% from the free throw line, while holding Virginia Tech below 60 points. If Virginia plays anywhere close to the way that it played against Virginia Tech, I do think that they'll win the game. But I'm just going to rely on this, and perhaps this is just oversimplifying, but I'm going to take the team that still, even without Trey Jones, has three projected top five picks in its starting lineup playing at home. Like, how do you intelligently pick against a team that's got three top five picks playing at home? Like, I'm just going to take that team, right?
Yeah, Virginia's 47-3 in its last 50 games, which is just absurd.
How do you pick against that team? Let me rephrase.
Yeah, how do you pick against a team that's won 12 straight games in the ACC on the road? On the road, 12 straight road victories for Virginia. So you can place it either way. It's This is a real treat here. This is a special game on Saturday, and we've got some other intriguing ones that we're going to touch on real quick here in a minute. But you know, you don't get this kind of matchup all that often, because with every, it's not just Virginia and Duke, an undefeated team playing at Duke and all that. It's what Duke has this season. It's the subplot of not having Trey Jones most likely, and then Virginia coming off the first ever 16-1, and now still being undefeated, only one two teams left, and en route to getting the 16-0, it's not winning games 55-50. It's putting up 81 points on a Virginia Tech team that was allowing it was top five in points allowed defense, and it didn't matter whatsoever. So I really hope we get a nice one.
Yeah, my official prediction, I'll take Duke in a close one, but to underline the point we just made, I don't know how you pick against a team that's got three top five picks playing at home. I also don't know how you pick against a team that's playing the way Virginia is playing. Like, either team that you pick against, and if the result is opposite of what you suggested, you'll go, well, Jesus, how could I pick it? Why would I have picked against that team? They had three top five picks playing at home, or they've literally never lost this season. Why would I think they were going to lose now? So it's just a tremendous matchup. I'm looking forward to it. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but I do want to spend just a moment on it. Scottie Pippen made headlines this week when he said that Zion Williamson should just shut it down, said he secured his place atop the draft. Only bad things can happen if he keeps playing, so why keep playing? You and I haven't talked about this at all, so I want to hear your reaction to that, and then I'll give you mine.
It's not a bad opinion. I understand where Pippen is coming from with this. It's not going to happen. Let's make that clear. And if it did. Well, if it did, it'd be the biggest story in sports. Let's be real. Short of what the Super Bowl is bringing and forthcoming, Zion Williamson quitting playing for Duke would be the biggest story in sports if he did it midseason. It's not going to happen. But there's what he is saying has validity, and it is the next step. I don't expect we'll get to this being a regularity. If you told me we saw it happen twice in the next decade, I would believe you. And that is players sitting out for bowls that don't matter in college football, and players opting to maybe try and take the G League route if they think that they've got a shot at getting to the NBA and they want to make a little coin right away, capitalize off of their marketing. And we've already talked about all that stuff and how some of that's overblown. But the idea of a first-round talent stepping away from his team in the middle of the season to preserve his NBA draft stock and not chance getting injured. I can see that being a rarity, but happening. I don't see it happening here. And also, the chance for injury in basketball, obviously Trey Jones just got hurt, but again, he's expected to return soon, is not at the same kind of risk as in football, where it is a much more violent game. And in particular for Zion Williamson, who looks as indestructible of a college player, not to say that he is infallible, he's not, but he looks as indestructible as a college player as frankly we've ever seen. So this makes for easy fodder, a lot of talking points. I'm going to assume that Pippen believes it. Obviously, it came on ESPN, which generates so much Zion Williamson content. It kind of keeps that wheel going and greases it to a heavy degree. It's not going to happen. If Williamson decided to do it, I wouldn't necessarily hugely object to it, because it's his prerogative, and then he's got to deal with any of the fallout. What are your take?
Well, first, I just think it's funny that ESPN brings a Hall of Famer on ESPN, and then he tries to say that the ratings bonanza that is Zion Williamson for ESPN should shut it down. I mean, like, the ESPN executives can't be happy about that, although it did produce content and debate, so perhaps they are. Here's what I would say. If Zion wanted to do it, I would not write the column saying, what is this young man doing? Because I don't think he should be in college. My fundamental belief on all this is that these guys, RJ Barrett, Zion Williamson, Michael Porter Jr., any of the obvious one-and-done talents that we see come through college basketball, I love that they play college basketball. It makes the sport more interesting. It's better for me personally. It's better for you personally. I don't know that it's better for them personally. And so let the record show, I'm always, like, if you put it to vote tomorrow, can we just let high school players go straight into the NBA draft if they want to? I will vote yes every time. I've never been in a place in my adult life where I would have voted no. That said, I actually don't think Zion, quote, should shut it down right now, because to insist that he should is to imply, to insist that he should because he's secured a certain draft status is to imply that he should only care about his draft status. And I haven't talked to Zion about this, but I imagine what Zion would tell you, or his stepfather holding a baby would tell you, is that that's just not true. That there are other things that matter. That's why they're in college to begin with. And I bet if you talk to Zion 30 years from now, when he's 50 and 375 pounds, he would tell you that he's going to look back on that 1 year he spent at Duke as one of his favorite years in his life. Because when you talk to professional basketball players, if they went to a college where they had a good experience, and obviously being ranked number one in the country, being on SportsCenter every night, playing with other great players, playing in a game like they're going to play on Saturday, those are good memories. They tell you that, you know, man, that was the most fun I've ever had. And so I think sometimes people make the mistake of assuming that these elite prospects only care about being prospects. Some of them do, but I think most of them like really enjoy being a player. And I think Zion, for that reason, is not going to shut it down, nor should he. Because, yeah, there's always a risk of injury, but the risk in basketball is much, as you point out, lower than it is in football. Although we have had lottery picks each of the past 2 years suffer, season-ending injuries. I acknowledge that. But I just don't think we're going to get to a place where basketball players are starting a season with a team, you know, securing a place in the draft, and then going, okay, that's it. Like, should Ja Morant just shut it down right now? I know those dudes at Eastern Illinois wish he would because he dunked all over them on Thursday night.
He's insane. I know what you're saying. Yeah,
he's not going to shut it down just because he's now an undeniable top 10 pick.
I agree.
He probably loves what he's doing right now, averaging big points, big assists with his friends on his way to maybe going to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
And so you mentioned that football players do this all the time. When it gets to the bowl game,
correct,
but not to the college football playoff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't see Alabama's players shutting it down, or Clemson's players shutting it down. You see, Memphis's running back shutting it down, saying, "All right, that's it. I don't care about playing in the Birmingham Bowl. What's the point?" That you weigh the pros and cons, and the pros don't outweigh the cons, so you just shut it down. Any projected lottery pick who's playing for a good team and doing good things, I don't think those guys are going to shut it down, nor should shut it down. I think Scotty was being a little myopic here. Zion Williamson has secured his place probably atop the draft, but there's other things that are important to Zion, and to walk away from it now would be would run counter to those things, I think.
I agree with most of that, and it's also, you know, he loves playing with those guys for that coach. It's inside the locker room. It's a different situation altogether. All right, GP, I want to know what games you want to get to. I know Kentucky, Auburn. You got Michigan, Wisconsin, TCU, Kansas State. What else?
Yeah. I think there's two big games outside of the ones we've already talked about this weekend. At least two games that resonate with the audience we're hopefully talking to right now. The only other game between two teams ranked in the AP poll that's scheduled for this weekend is Kentucky at Auburn. It is number 12 Kentucky at number 14 Auburn. Tip is scheduled for 4 p.m. Eastern. The Wildcats get a road win, or are you taking Bruce Pearl?
Well, you mentioned Kentucky being 3-3 against the top 100. It's almost the inverse of the Duke-Virginia conundrum because, you know, Kentucky has been up and down. How could you pick them? Well, Auburn, you make the easy case that the three toughest games is played. Duke at NC State at Ole Miss has lost all three. Now, Auburn gets the benefit of having this game on its home floor, but neither of these teams have passed all the tests as they've played their best opponents so far this season. I'm going to take Auburn in this one, not just because of the home floor. I don't know what the line – I'm going to guess the line is 3 Tigers, minus 3 for Auburn. It's got the guards. Bryce Brown, fun dude to watch play basketball. Jared Harper's been good, and Austin Wiley has been pretty solid on the whole overall. So I like what they've got to compete with Kentucky's roster. I want to see if Ashton Hagans can have a, I believe, seventh straight game with at least three steals. That's already a program record. Auburn isn't the best ball handling team in America, so I think Hagans actually has a decent shot at that. But this is, yeah, this should be a fun one, should be a good one. And it, to me, it's the second most interesting game of the day. It's a 4 p.m. tip, so you'll actually catch this as the lead-in to the UVA-Duke game. I'll take the Tigers. What about you?
I think that's the most compelling thing about this game, is that it's two teams that are undeniably good, but both of whom have really questionable resumes. Like you mentioned, Auburn is 0-3 against the three best teams that it's played, and Kentucky is 3-3 against the top 100. Like, Kentucky fans are hitting me on Twitter every day. Like, why do you have Kentucky ranked where you have Kentucky ranked? Like, I think I got them like 19th or 20th or something. Now I'm an idiot who doesn't watch basketball. Which may be true, you know, by the way, I'm busy, but like same people who thought I was smart for ranking Kentucky number one in the preseason are now calling me an idiot for having Kentucky, you know, outside of the top 15, which, as long as we're being honest, having Kentucky number one in the preseason was much more idiotic than having Kentucky wherever I have Kentucky right now. So they're just being fans, bless their hearts. But, you know, I never seen Kentucky fans be so proud of a team that's 3-3 against the top 100. Like, usually they're proud of a team that's like, you know, got one loss and ranked in the top three. But the Kentucky fans super proud of this team that's 3-3 against the top 100 at KenPom. Auburn 0-3 against the best teams that has played. So both these teams, I think, need a win, not to do anything other than prevent people from asking big questions about them. Because think about what a loss does. A loss drops Auburn to 0-4 against the four best teams that has played, and a loss drops Kentucky to 3-4 against the top 100 at KenPom. So, big game, important game for both teams. I think Auburn wins only because Auburn's at home. If you played this at Rupp, I'd take Kentucky. If you played it on a neutral court, I'd flip a coin. But I'll take Auburn at home to win this game, improve to 14-3, and have really its first big win of the season. If you want something more specific, it's first top 40 KenPom win of the season. And then the other game that is interesting is Michigan at Wisconsin, because both of the teams that are undefeated in the country, undefeated right now, the only two in the country, are on the road against quality opponents this season, against quality opponents right now. It's Virginia at Duke and Michigan at Wisconsin. Michigan-Wisconsin tips at noon Eastern. Michigan 17-0. But Wisconsin is just, even if the computers still like them, they're just 11-6. They've lost four of their past five, lost to Minnesota at home, Purdue at home. The Kohl Center is typically a tough place to play, not so much lately. I know a few podcasts ago, we mentioned this earlier, you thought Michigan might get caught here. You sticking with that, or have you lost faith in Wisconsin?
I'm going to stick with it. I think this is the exact type of game that Wisconsin wins. I think it'll be within 6 points almost the entire game. I think it'll be 4 points max with a minute to go. I will take Wisconsin to win this, and there's not a lot indicating that it should, dropping four of the past five. Its only win over bad Penn State, and what it did out of conference, there's not a ton there. A nice win over Oklahoma, but not much else. And that being said, I'm still going to take them. Ethan Happ, Brad Davidson, pretty good, reliable shooter. Dimitri Trice, underrated and maybe needs to have a big game in this one to have a shot against Michigan. So I will take the Badgers there, but I get the sense that you will not.
I'm trying to think of what I picked for our expert picks. I think I picked Wisconsin, but I can't remember.
Like,
so if I'm
like
contradicting myself, just understand it's because I have no idea what I did 12 hours ago, right? Okay. But this reminds me a little bit of, I don't know if you watched it the other night, but UCF at Wichita State. Mm-hmm. Like, UCF is rolling, mm-hmm. you know, borderline top 25 team, you know, the first place in the American Athletic Conference. Wichita State, winless in the league, not good, you know, right around 500. But at some point you just go, all right, that's Coke Arena, that's Greg Marshall, that's Wichita State. They're just not going to lose another home game. And they end up winning the home game. Now, I'll be honest, I picked UCF to win that game, so I'm just wrong about everything. But yeah, this feels like that. Like, even though Wisconsin isn't playing well, and hasn't been good. It's still Wisconsin and the Colts. Once upon a time, and maybe this is Bo Ryan time and not necessarily Greg Gard time, but once upon a time, you just did not pick against Wisconsin at home. And so I'll take Wisconsin at home. Plus, it's just easier for the top 25 and one if Virginia loses at Duke and Michigan loses at Wisconsin, because I've got Tennessee number one right now. And I hear about it every day, although I don't know what you guys are talking about, because like Tennessee beats the crap out of everybody. Like, do you know that when Tennessee beat Arkansas the other night, it became just the third power conference team in the past 20 years to start a league schedule 4-0 with wins total by a combined 100 points or more?
I did not know
only,
that.
Only two teams in the past 20 years in a power conference have done that, and Tennessee became the third. So, like, when I moved Tennessee to number one, it was nobody argued, because they had the best resume, or at least something close to the best resume at the time. And literally since that moment, all they've done is beat the crap out of everybody. So I don't know why people are thinking it's so absurd. Some people, it's really just Michigan and Virginia fans, think it's so absurd that Tennessee is number one. But it gets really complicated if Virginia's undefeated coming off wins over Virginia Tech, Duke, and Michigan's undefeated coming off a win at the Kohl Center. So it is best for the top 25 and one for Michigan to lose, Virginia to lose. So in purely rooted in selfishness, I'll take Wisconsin to give Michigan its first loss of the season, but we'll see. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry M.F. Antigo. He's a legend. Shouts to Lauren Allen. If you haven't done it already, please go subscribe to the Island College Basketball Podcast via Apple Podcasts. Rate it favorably. 5 stars, nice comments. That's all I've ever asked from you. It's all I ever remember asking from you, and it only takes a couple of seconds. So if you've done it already, thank you sincerely. It really does help. If you haven't done it, please just pop over there and do it, and I'll be very proud of you, and then we'll talk to you again on Sunday night. Till then, take care.